How are you just updating to iOS 15 now? It came out like 6 months ago, dude. Are you my mom?
Not 6 months. Not 6 months. Come on.
It comes out in September with the new phones.
Did it? Wait, that was 6 months ago almost.
September, October, November, December, January. It's almost February.
I hadn't updated because my phone is old and I just hadn't thought about it. And who cares? It was working fine.
I mean, okay, fair. Look, now you can FaceTime and share your screen with people. It's very exciting.
Oh, well, I can think of all kinds of uses for such a feature.
Look, my daughter loves the thing where you can watch a movie and it synchronizes with the person you're on FaceTime with.
If I had a social circle of 8-year-olds. Or...
Well, look, you got to first you got to aim the camera up at the ceiling and then you just sit there on video. Like, can you imagine like when I was 8 years old, if I had a way to video call people like from Star Trek? It would have blown my mind. And these insolent children just aim their iPads up at the ceiling and all they see is like the ceiling light and a white ceiling.
They don't know how good they have it.
Yeah, they don't appreciate this stuff.
Okay, enough of all that. I have bigger Apple news.
Oh, yeah. You hold on. AirPods Pro 2 coming now. You got rumors. You got hot leaks.
Why are you stealing my thunder?
What?
MacBook has landed.
Ooh, you got it?
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Wait, hold on. So it came from China.
And what I presume is a customs situation, although the FedEx tracking does not explicitly say customs. Okay, yeah. So first of all.
Yeah.
I have not bought my own MacBook since 2008.
Yeah, I've only ever bought one. Huh.
They've all been work provided since then.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever bought a MacBook. I think they've all been work provided.
And even at that time, I think I walked into an Apple store and bought it. But so this is the first one I think I've mail ordered. But is it customary for them to ship straight from what I assume is the factory? It ships straight out of Shanghai, and I don't know if that's like supply chain and logistics are jammed up and we are shipping orders straight from the factory to keep up with demand, or is that just their standard operating procedure?
So most of the time when I bought a MacBook, I bought one that was like an off-the-shelf, one of the off-the-shelf models, not something that required any kind of customization. And I would just go into the store and like I'd order it and then go pick it up at the store.
So you can't say that's what you're saying.
The phones almost always drop ship straight from China.
Oh, okay. So that is just a thing. It's not a pandemic thing. It's just a thing.
Yeah. And they do the pallet thing now where they send they bundle up a whole big stack of iPhones in one pallet, and then that clears customs all at once, and then it lands in Memphis or Long Beach or something, and gets blasted out from there via UPS. So
yes, my MacBook hit Memphis, Tennessee.
Ooh,
a full week ago by the time people hear this.
Oh no!
And let's see, arrived at FedEx Hub, in transit, package available for clearance. Clearance in progress, 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 clearance delay.
Uh-oh.
Over the course of three, four days of clearance in progress, and then as of last Wednesday, clearance delay import.
Brad, what if your MacBook is made of drugs?
Oh, I don't, what did they stuff in the battery compartment? That's not...
you got a fentanyl MacBook over there.
The brick in there is not lithium ion.
Oh, no.
It's cocaine. No, but it does just now say scheduled delivery pending. No scheduled delivery date available at this time. No action required at this time. I don't know when I'm going to see this laptop.
I try not to be obsessive when there's packages that I'm excited about coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've intentionally never signed up for any of those sites that will like give you notifications when you get like a UPS shipment coming to your address or whatever.
You like being pleasantly surprised?
No, it's just that if I'm excited about something, I'll just hammer the refresh button until it wears out the UPS website or FedEx website or whatever. But I had a really pleasant support interaction with Apple the other day. I got a watch for Christmas, an Apple Watch for Christmas, which is we'll at some point I want to talk about it because it's like ultimately an incredibly useless thing that makes me feel really good about using it in a way that is both disturbing and very pleasant.
That sounds like a lot of things in our modern world. Sure.
Kind of is. Yeah, it's maybe the or one of those like good, but maybe not good categories.
Hey, man, I think we'll call 911 for you.
I'm sure it will.
That sounds not entirely useless.
Look, it's very much marketed to be a, hey, here's a thing you can't afford not to have, right? it's really, really useful in some really limited situations. Like, it's nice to have a way to get notifications and manage notifications without having to take my phone out of my pocket. And it encouraged me strongly to prune out all of the annoying notifications that I don't need and only get the ones that are actually important and valuable to me.
Dude, that sounds nice. Do you think, is notification creep a problem other people have experienced in the pandemic? Because I am so inundated with phone notifications these days that they are all but useless. Like, I miss important messages all the time because they are like 28 notifications down by the time I wake up.
Well, so I actually had this conversation with Chet the other day. I was like, I was late for a meeting one day because my Outlook was binging so often that I just didn't pay attention to it. So I finally loaded up Outlook on Windows and figured out how to turn off all the notifications except for the meeting one and like emails from two things that are actually urgent that I get. And it made a huge difference. So yeah, like my wife, who I love dearly, does not prune her notifications, and it makes me crazy because if she leaves her phone facing up at nighttime, it just keeps illuminating the ceiling all night long.
No, do not disturb.
She doesn't do not disturb because she's worried that if we have like an earthquake or some sort of emergency, she won't get the hey, here's the alert notification thing.
Don't the Amber Alerts punch through?
Look, man, how much do you trust the technology, Brad?
This is a question this podcast is not qualified to answer.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I am Brad. Hello.
Hi. So to close the loop on my Apple support story, the wrong size wristband for my watch.
Oh.
And when I called them they said I had a chat interaction entirely in iMessage, which is weird.
Huh.
But like there's verified iMessage tags for Apple support and you get a little thing that's like, it has a little seal on next to it. And like at first they were going to make me come into a store. I was like, I can't come into a store right now. They're like, okay. And then they figured it out for me. It was very nice. And they sent me a new wristband and I sent it back the next day. And it was like the most seamless thing. So shout out to Apple.
At any time, did you thumbs up one of their iMessages?
I ha-ha'd one, but I'm going to go ahead and basically, they said something. I thought they were joking, and they were like, "Oh no, I wasn't joking." And at the end, I didn't get the response I wanted at first, and I literally said, "Hey, like, I understand you can't do anything else about this, but I want you to know I'm like, this is not a positive outcome for me." Like, and that's exactly what I said. Like, I was like, "This is not a positive outcome." And they came back like 3 minutes later, like, okay, we escalated you. Thank you so much for not yelling and being rude.
Dude, I think you have discovered the magic incantation that gets 100% results. It has a 100% success rate in support interactions.
Well, I mean, it kind of felt like that, right? Because it was very much like, hey, is this the magic, like, is this the magic word? Is not a positive outcome what they're looking for?
That's what it is. It's not, to be clear, I'm not talking about being nice to support people, because you should always be nice to support people or anybody in a service role. Not only because it's the right moral thing to do, but also it gets better results. Like, being nice to people gets better results than treating like a shit. Like, if you can't do it for the right reasons, do it for selfish reasons. But
it kind of bummed me out, though, that like that they were so shocked that I was polite that they thanked me for being polite.
Right. Like that. I've had similar experiences like that. That in itself is depressing. But the part I was talking about is not a positive outcome. Sounds like something right out of the support training handbook.
Yeah. Like, so anyway, like a positive outcome technique and let us know how it goes for you.
You may very well have been putting the fear of God into that support person by uttering that phrase.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt them. Brad, it's my favorite time of month.
Oh.
We're turning Q's into A's today, baby.
Oh, I thought you meant you made more eggnog.
I haven't. My relationship with eggnog's a little fraught since landed me in the hospital.
I'm sorry. I keep forgetting. I shouldn't bring that up.
The gallbladder comes out on Friday, though, so I got that going for me. It'll be less than 6 days left.
Are you excited?
I could not be more excited.
Are you excited about that laparoscopy?
Look,
laparoscopy?
laparoscopy. I don't know. I'm not the one to come to for pronunciations, it turns out. But I did ask the surgeon if we could like double up and like, I have some shoulder stuff that's going to need some work at some point. I was like, well, I'm out. Can you just, you know, jam out the shoulder thing? He's like, he looked at me like I asked him if he, I would like amputate a toe for him or something. Anyway, you were turning Q's and A's. If you have questions, you can go to send them via email, electronic mails to techpod@content.town. Or if you're in the Discord, if you're a TechPod patron, one of the fabulous 3,000 people who support the show, you can go to the Q's questions into answers channel and post your question there.
I'm glad you pivoted straight into questions, because I was going to say that the jumbo economy bundle of surgical procedures sounds like exactly the kind of dystopia we're headed for.
Look, I have to have an endoscopy to get a stent, the bile duct stent out, which is funny because also I've blocked enough people on Twitter that I've been getting stent ads for the last few months.
God.
So like when he was like, hey, we had to put a stent, I was like, oh, what brand did you use? You use a Novotech brand stent, or did you get one of those Stentopolis ones?
We have to start the questions, but if for no other reason than that I already have like 5 potential titles for this episode. I can't juggle them all.
Well, I asked if we could just do the colonoscopy at the same time. He's like, no, you don't want that. Anyway, here we go. Okay.
All right.
Questions, answers.
Yes. Thank you to everybody who wrote in. I will start with this question from Gage 006. Is tech boring now? What was the most exciting release of 2021?
Wait, do you think Gage 006 is a reference to James Bond or a wire gauge?
It is Gage 00. Well, that's not spelled like Gage. There's U. This G-A-G-E, which I think is a relatively common name.
Yeah, G-A-G-E is a common name. G-A-U-G-E is like the size of a pipe.
I think I heard there like a demon child in a Stephen King novel was named Gage. I forget. Was that Pet Sematary?
I'll say yes.
I mean, hang on. Now I have to know before we...
Okay,
I'm sorry. I got it. G-A-G-E is the child who comes back from the dead in Pet Sematary. Moving on.
There you go. I don't like the weird thing about 2021 is like the stuff that I was the most excited about got delayed.
Yeah. So, I guess real quick, just to refine this question. I mean, they did say what was the most exciting release. So I guess they are specifically asking about products that hit the market and not just like headlines in a general sense.
I think so. Like I kind of expected 2021 to be the year that like new consoles got readily available, but that didn't really happen.
No.
I mean, you can get a Series S pretty easily if you want one these days, but Series X or PS5 are both still pretty hard to find, although better now after the holidays than they were before, it seems like. Yeah.
I needed a Series S in late November and I kind of just went and bought one.
Yeah. I when I was in Palm Desert in September, I was sitting there and I got a notification that Target had them in stock like 3 miles from me, and I just went and picked one up. It's a nice little console. I for the TVs that I have, it's fine.
Yeah.
I was excited about Stream Deck. I was excited about Playdate. Both of those got pushed into 2022. Mm-hmm. The phones last year were kind of incremental, I think.
Yeah. I'm sure I've said this at some point somewhere before, but like phones are so not an event to me at this point. Like the phone has fully just become a necessary appliance that I don't think about anymore. Like the role of the phone is just to be there and do what it does. And like a new one's going to come out every year and I'm not going to care until I feel like the old one is slow and clunky enough, you know, phones. I just don't know what else phones could do to be exciting again.
For me, there's two things that happen with the phone. One is that I always like Gina's phone is an instant upgrade for us just because she takes most of the pictures in the house. And like, that is the one place where there are non-incremental upgrades every year.
That's fair. If you do take a lot of pictures, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And like the addition of the stuff that like the night mode one was the last big one, but that's gotten substantially better every year. And we take enough pictures in low light that it turns out to be really useful. I have taken pictures in what seems like almost pitch black to my eyes now with the last year's iPhone.
That is very cool.
For me, the phone is my main work computer a lot of times. And it's basically like, oh, it's $1,000 a year for my main work computer to be the nice one. That seems like a good year. I mean, in reality, it's like $500 a year because of the way the annual thing works. But anyway. Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird year. Like for me, the PS5 was the most exciting thing I bought last year tech wise. It was such a nice upgrade over the previous generation in literally every way.
Yeah.
Like it's quieter. Everything, the frame rates are just unbelievable on the games that I've played.
Yeah.
Like everything about it's good.
I can't say I'm playing unreleased video games that are embargoed. I can't say too much, but I've been spending a lot more time on the PS5 recently and I'm pretty excited about how games run on there and such and the load times and et cetera, et cetera. I may be biased because I hopefully will have one in my hands in the coming days, but the refresh on the M1 MacBooks, I think is my answer. Specifically because that chip sounds so ridiculous. Like everything about it. I mean, if you go out there and look at like the convergence of like compute power and thermals and battery usage and stuff, sounds like magic. Like it just doesn't sound like it should be possible. You know, it's like you go out there and see these benchmarks where they're like, hey, we ran like an Adobe Premiere encode that put every core at 100% and it didn't even tilt the fans up. Like, and it still ran for another 8 hours or something. You know what I mean? It's like things that should not be possible out of a computer, especially a laptop. Like it just sounds like it goes forever. It's faster than anything out there. It's just, it's wild.
Literally better in every way is the story.
Also, like when I was specking that thing out, I mean, you know, Apple upgrade prices are exorbitant, of course.
Yeah.
So it was like, I think it was $400 to go from 16 to 32 gigs of memory.
Did it come with anything else? Did you get like a bigger SSD at the same time or
no? For that 400? No. Bigger SSD is a separate surcharge. I didn't really have a need for 32 gig anyway, but I was still kind of staring at it. But then I was reading like the way that thing, the memory interface on that thing, I don't know a lot of the technical details, but it's like the memory interface is such and the SSD in it is fast enough that it's able to cache to the SSD that is like some pretty good significant percentage of the memory speed already.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so like apparently it's swapping to this super fast SSD so much that like the amount of memory you have is actually not quite as consequential. That was my understanding.
The thing I was going to say is that at least on OS 10 for x86, the OS 10 handled smaller amounts of memory better than Windows does typically.
Yeah.
So like my 8 gig MacBook Pro from like 2013 or 2014, whatever year I bought that, is always felt faster than a 16 gig, my 16 gig 2 year newer Razer laptop.
So. Right. So all the anecdotal info I can find says that this M1 paradigm has only increased that kind of memory efficiency.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting.
The other, the niche stuff was really good last year too. Like I bought one of those Elgato face cams. Like I'd been looking at getting a real, like a mirrorless camera to use as a stream camera and a video call camera all year. And then those things came out for $200 and are fucking awesome. Like really, really good. You don't need an extra capture thing to make them work. And
is it USB?
It's a USB-C. Yeah.
Okay.
And it uses their Cam Link. It uses basically the same hardware as their Cam Link. So it's basically, and it's a Sony sensor with a fixed focus lens. So it's a lot of glass for that thing. And I use them for streams and for video. I'm on one right now.
Are you saying that it comes with a Cam Link or it uses Cam Link like hardware that's built in?
The Cam Link hardware is integrated on the camera.
I see. Okay. I didn't know that thing was mirrorless. That's cool.
Well, I mean, it is a not webcam sensor. It's a real camera sensor with pretty good optics on a fixed focus lens. So it's like a cheap mirrorless, basically.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, that's what, you know, a lot of the like Sony and Canon level mirrorless cameras that are actually technically like nice point and shoot, like actual photography cameras that people are using for camera. Those are mirrorless, you know? So that's like kind of in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else you got?
That's some stuff. Let's see here. How about, say something. I have to find a, oh, here we go. I found a question. Joshington. This one's more for Will, but how do you maintain such a great big beard?
Oh,
do you use anything to keep things in check?
I mean, it has to be pruned regularly and watered.
Miracle Grow on there? What's your beard food of choice?
What are you talking about? Miracle Grow? I get the phosphates and the bone meal straight on there. So I have beard soap that is, that I use like usually like twice a week. Like you can kind of tell when it needs to be washed. It's like somewhere between a shampoo and a face soap. It has a little bit of oil, so your skin doesn't dry out underneath. If you use like normal shampoo on the beard, you're going to have, face problems in my experience. So yeah, getting a beard soap, it's like a cube of like hardcore. It smells like, I don't know, it smells like dude smells. It's like sandalwood and eucalyptus oil and stuff, I think. And then I do alternately oil and a little bit of wax. And then I have a brush. Like it gets combed. Sometimes if I want to like buff it out, I'll put a little stuff on it and brush it in with like a boar bristle brush.
How do you trim and shape a beard when it's as voluminous as yours? Are you using like some kind of upside down flowy situation to maintain the shape? Like, what are we talking?
That would be nice. In the before times, I would go usually like once a month to the barber and get them to do a beard trim.
Ooh.
Which is like, I don't know, even in San Francisco, it's like $15 plus tip. So it's like a good 20 or 30 minutes and they just shape it up and kind of even out any places. These days I wash it, I comb it out. And then once it dries, I get in with a pair of clippers and I just freehand it. And I'm real careful not to get in too far. Sure. The trick is the chin part doesn't require as often trimming as the sides. Like the sides get real bushy if you let them just grow. And I don't like that. So, but yeah, the oil keeps it from getting all frizzy and super duper bushy. It's kind of like conditioner that just doesn't mess up your skin underneath your face.
Would you say everything you just said also applies to somebody like me with a much closer cropped beard?
Or
are there variations there?
I mean, you could do the shampoo if you want. I don't, when my beard was the length of yours, I didn't find it necessary to do a lot of, like, I just used face wash, cause it didn't last long enough to get dry and crunchy like it does on the ends of the long one. Sure. I think you could do a little oil or a wax or something to put a little shine on it if you want. You know, I like a shiny beard.
I still think of, much like my long hair, I still think of this beard as temporary.
Well, I mean, me too, but mine's been around since like 2009 at this point. So I don't remember what my face looks like anymore, Brad. It's kind of weird.
Your beard is a permanent resident now.
My daughter's never seen me without a beard. She's 9 years old.
Well, now you can never go back.
Yeah, I know. She when I threaten to cut it, she gets real nervous. So
yikes. Yeah. Let's see. Question from Little Jackal. It's often fun to hear folks recount their old war stories in hindsight. The recent Log4j vulnerabilities ruined a lot of folks' holidays this year, for example. Without breaking any NDAs, have either of you ever had an all-hands-on-deck multi-day work emergency in your careers you can talk about without bringing up old trauma?
Huh.
Like, I wish I had a better answer for this. Like, working in publishing and media.
Well,
like we didn't have a lot of, like, technical moving parts that we were responsible for. So it was not necessarily something where we could break something we had to fix.
We had a couple of max, like every once in a while we'd lose like a big multi-page ad at Maximum PC at the last minute. And then we'd have to scramble and come up with a feature or something that would fill those four pages in the middle of the magazine.
Sure.
But those weren't like all hands on deck. That was basically like one person would go and make up usually we'd steal a feature from the next month or something like that. And, you know, somebody would write it up and then somebody'd have to edit it and lay it out and all that.
Yeah.
I did one time fuck up the mail servers at when I was doing IT for the University of Tennessee. Like I did a notes or domino upgrade that went bad and had to restore from backup. And like I inherited all that from the person who came before me. And I don't think that they had ever actually tested that the backup system worked. They'd never actually done a restore. And had to, like, the first restore failed and the second restore failed. And I ended up staying from 6 p.m. until I got it back working again at about 6 a.m. And I ended up leaving work that day about the time people showed up for the next day.
And then missed a day, or were you expected back?
I told them I wasn't going to be there because there was nothing. Like, if they had told me to sit there, then I would have been able to just go take a nap in my office. But, like, I was like, I'm not going to be in any shape to do work today. So
sure. That's fair. I think I've alluded to this before. It's probably fine. this is maybe how oppressive the environment was that I'm still afraid to talk about this. I think there is a pretty decent chance that one year at GameSpot, I rsynced all of the embargoed assets for all of E3 to the live website.
Oh boy.
Like a day or two before E3 started.
Oh boy.
It was fine because there was nothing pointing to any of it. It was just files.
Yeah, it was just on FTP. It was just your end and
a bunch of like screenshots of embargoed games sitting there that if any people had the direct links with the full file names, they could have pulled up. But because the file names were enough of a mess. Nobody ever found anything, but it's because being in the previews department there, like speed was the ultimate mandate, right? Like it was, that was full on in the days of like GameSpot versus IGN. Like everybody's got to be first. And because of that, I ended up learning a lot of website backend stuff, or enough to be dangerous to get things done faster, because we had like a, I guess you were in print and then you went to test it. So you probably skipped this, the phase of web publishing where you had a human production department that put everything together for you and posted it to the website.
Yeah, we never had that. We went straight from no website to movable type. Well, okay. That's not true. In 2001, we had a production department with like a designer who you handed off copy to, and she would do the layout. Like she would do a little bit of HTML on it and then put it in what was I'm sure a phenomenally expensive, like Adams type backend CMS thing that was like a closed source proprietary thing we paid for, I'm sure.
That was exactly the situation at GameSpot. And we literally had a production department. It was only two or three people, but you literally you wrote up your stories, you like put the screenshots in the folder and stuff, but then you send it off to them and they built the pages.
Yeah.
And then you'd like QA them and make sure they were good and then tell them, okay, press publish or whatever. So like I learned enough of how to do that stuff to circumvent that process so we could get preview stuff up faster.
I used to
late at night, like in a hotel room a couple of days before E3, like trying to push one thing live. I think I pushed everything live that we had loaded in. And like, I probably, if that had been fully cracked open and all those screenshots had leaked, I probably would have lost my job. I don't know.
We had a handful, like when we started doing the website at Max PC, a lot of PR people didn't really realize that we were doing a website yet. And so we would have like print embargo, like we would always have print embargoes, but we never signed NDAs. And like, we just, as a publication, didn't do NDAs. Cause we were like, look, we haven't broken it. We've literally had never broken an embargo. And because like once upon a time we had signed an NDA, somebody changed their dates at the last minute, and we had to scramble to fill a cover because our print date was going to be before their new NDA and they wouldn't let us slide.
Okay.
So we just stopped signing embargoes after that point. Like we were like, we're not going to fucking do it. If you want to be in the magazine, you have to, this is the deal. And we had a couple of situations where somebody would give us a print embargo, but their web embargo would be different because they knew, like, and they didn't communicate that to us because they didn't realize we had a website. And like, we had a couple of those that were kind of bad, but that was just like, hey, unpublish it or apologize and
right.
Forgiveness, not permission. I can't imagine how much shit you would have been in if you had leaked all the pre assets for E3. That would have been,
again, I probably would have gotten fired. Like that would have done enormous damage to our relationship with every publisher that whose stuff we leaked.
Yeah, they would have fired you into the sun probably.
I still am not 100% sure that I did it. I'm 90% sure that it was the whole directory and not just the subset of files I meant to do.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is once you got stuff into those folders, it was hard to get them out on our CMS, at least. Like once you uploaded, like you could upload whatever you wanted, but if you wanted to delete something from the back end, you had CLI access. You
couldn't absolutely do it from the... This would have required like heavy Unix lifting at that time for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about possible old screw-ups. They can't hurt me anymore. Let's just move on. Next question, how about from Times Hero?
Okay.
It's good, good post plus username here on this one. I'm looking for some advice on getting this Panasonic RC6485 flip clock functioning again. I might make this image the show art, but
it's such a good picture.
It's so good. But also if you ever saw an alarm clock in the 80s, you know exactly what this flip clock is. It was working fine before Christmas, but now it doesn't seem to change time anymore. When it's plugged in, the motor still turns, but the numbers don't flip. They do all still function when turning the set time dial. Any advice? Service manuals are hard to come by in a timely manner. YouTube tutorials are available for similar but different clocks wherein they clean the motor. That may be above my abilities, however. For podcast purposes, any advice on restoring cool old tech like this, something other than don't?
Okay. So this is, if you don't know what a flip clock is, they were basically, it was a spinny thing with two hinged pieces of plastic or cellulose or wood that would have half of a letter printed on the top, or a number printed on the top, and half of the numbers printed on the bottom. And like the hour side was one dial, the minute side was another dial. This one is super cool though, because in addition to those two dials, it also has a day of week and date.
Oh, you're right. I hadn't seen one like this before.
Yeah. And it also has, I think, a seconds dial over on the left as well, but I'm not sure if that's what that is. And so you gave a really good clue here. A, you should absolutely fix these things because like the price of messing it up. Well, first off, go to eBay and find out if you can get another one if you mess the first one up, because a lot of times on this stuff, you'll see like 20 of these for like $10 each because nobody gives a shit about them anymore. And if that's the case, absolutely take it apart, figure out how it works, and then use that knowledge on the second one that you order from eBay to replace the guts of the one that you broke. The dial turning, the time setting working, but the motor not turning when the motor still turns when it's plugged in, to me says, hey, there's something wrong on the gearing between the motor, the mechanism that turns the dials between the motor and the mechanism itself, but not from the time dial side. So you can look at how the time setting side is working and then go back in and extrapolate from there to figure out what's going on. My question is, does any part of it work? Like is the day turning over? Is the seconds dial working? Like, is it that the motor isn't providing enough torque to actually flip the doozits anymore, the dials? Like, this is such a cool one too, because it has so many different bits and pieces. So
did you see they posted a picture of the fully assembled clock?
Yeah. It's also a top and bottom one.
That's a big one. That is a sizable alarm clock. It looks like a pretty big clock radio, actually.
My guess is, like, if the motor was burned out, that would be pretty easy to fix. My guess is that either a gear has slipped inside the thing that turns the mechanism, or like the transmission for the mechanism, or there's stripped gears somewhere.
Yeah. My advice, I mean, they asked for advice on restoring tech. Like, my advice was just going to be like, hey, sir, just take stuff apart and tinker with it and see how it works. But then, yes, as you said, like, can't just go out and buy another one of these at the store. So when it's this old, maybe take some precautions or have some backups.
I mean, this is a perfect example of a thing that I bet there's not this happens with consoles, like where when I was 25, you could go to every flea market in the country and buy NES cartridges for $1 each at every flea market or antique store or whatever in the country. And now they're collectible, so they're much more expensive. I bet that this kind of clock is in that same kind of category where it's still cheap. The other option, if you're not comfortable with that, is almost every small town has a clock repair place, and I would call them and see if they fool with this kind of clock. They may just do older, like more mechanical mechanisms than non-electric. But if they don't, I bet they'll know someone who can fix it for you if you're afraid to take it apart.
Yeah. It's got a cool retro, I mean, obviously it literally is retro, but like it looks cool. It's got a nice aesthetic to it. This clock is chunky and wood paneled.
They make such a good hum too.
Yeah.
Like it's the little hum of the motor is just a all the time.
Let's see. Next question. This is a quick one from Simply Bagel. 27-inch or 32-inch monitor?
What do you have?
So these are, I have two 27. Yeah. So I think I have decided that for now in my life, 1440p 27 inches, like the sweet spot for monitors for me.
So I think
it's pretty much the perfect combo.
You split the difference of what I have, cause I have two stacked vertically, and I have a 1080p 24. That's a really high refresh rate one down bottom that I play games on. Mm. And then I have a 4k 27 up top.
Okay. So early in the pandemic, in the interim, I grabbed a very cheap 1080p 24 inch.
Yeah.
And thought like, oh, this is fine. 1080p is a good standard resolution, whatever. And started to get a second one of those. And then circumstances aligned that I could get bigger ones.
Yeah.
1080p 24 is not enough.
The combo works pretty well for me because I can put four 1080p windows up on the top monitor and use it for like stuff I need to keep open all the time, like Teams or Discord or whatever I'm working on. But then the bottom monitor becomes essentially a full screen. Like I hardly ever, like right now I have our call and our show notes open on half Z windows on the bottom monitor, but most of the time it's full screen apps only on the downstairs.
Sure. I assume we're probably just going to get to a point where 4K is the default in monitors. I mean, it's not close. I guess that's probably another 5 years plus away.
I mean, maybe, but like
aren't we eventually, you know, like how monitor, the default monitor was 1080p for so long. Like, aren't we just going to get to the point where like economies of scale on 4K panels and et cetera, like that's just going to be the thing that's out there.
I mean, that pixel density is the thing. The nice thing about 4K is that 1080p scales up really easily right. to 4K for games. Yes.
Yeah, like 1440. I mean, people haven't done the math like that. That's true of 720p to 1440p. Like, that relationship is true there, too. Not that there's a lot of 720 stuff out there at this point.
Did you see the thing? Like, I was a little skeptical about 1080p games, but I think I've come to the point where I'd prefer to have frame rate than resolution.
Yeah. Do you mean on consoles?
I'm talking about on PC even. Oh. Like I'd rather have 144 frames a second than, but there was a thing on Digital Foundry when around the time Forza Horizon came out, where they were talking about 30 frames of like, they were preferring 30 frames a second with motion blur with like the good motion blur turned on
to 60
to 60.
And I cannot endorse that. I'm sorry.
I thought it was crazy. And then I tried, I was like, you know, this is okay.
Maybe for some games, sure, but not a driving game.
I mean, I'm bad at that driving game, so I don't know. Anyway, I tend to go with speed, frame rate over resolution.
Yes, I absolutely.
It's the only argument against 4K for me, I guess.
I absolutely am in the same boat, and it actually makes me wonder. I mean, I'm still on a 1080p TV, but I definitely know people personally who have 4K, nice 4K TVs, but love frame rate.
I would rather have high frame rate on my console games, I think.
Right. What is going on in those people's minds every time? Like, because this is happening over and over that you get a Series X or PS5 game and your choices are 4K 30 or 1080p 60. Like, are people just biting the bullet and doing a quarter resolution on their nice fancy TV to get the frame rate? Like, well, probably what I would do.
The scalers are pretty good. Like, going from 1080p to 4K upscale, just even on a standard upscaler, is pretty good these days.
Sure.
So probably okay.
Yeah, I don't know I wonder what scaling solution those consoles use, actually. Like, NVIDIA only added integer scaling for 1080p to 4K last year to their drivers, or maybe late 2020. Like, it hasn't been around that long. Anyway.
I mean, and just to be, in integer scaling, this one means that you're basically turning every pixel into 4 pixels.
Right.
And there's no fuzziness.
No fuzzy blending going on there.
Yeah.
Just a linear upscale. Anyway, it's pretty far afield of the basic question of 27 or 32. I'm sticking with 27 for, like, put it another way, I don't think I would want a 4K monitor until I could get it in a 27-ish inch range. Like, I wouldn't want to go bigger than that if I could help.
27, the 27-inch 4K is pretty good. And it like, I use it at the 1.5x scaling in Windows.
That's probably the bigger thing, actually. I know macOS handles this well, but, like, Windows and, you know, Linux desktop environments, like, UIs need to get better at scaling to 4K.
Windows handles it very poorly still, even in Windows 11.
Yeah.
Like, I'm moving Windows between the bottom monitor and the top monitor. Sometimes stuff is way small on the big top monitor. Sometimes it's really huge on the bottom monitor, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah.
It is after using Mac OS. Cause I, like, when I was writing more for tested, I would just use my laptop, my Mac laptop plugged into a 4K monitor, a 1X DPI monitor, and it handled it so much better than this does. So,
all right. Question for me before we move on.
Okay.
Is it crazy if I have two identical monitors.
Yes.
If you had two monitors that, like, you like the size and resolution, but there were, like, three different things about their feature set that was so much of a pain in the ass to deal with. Is it crazy to get rid of those monitors and buy other monitors at the same exact size and resolution to not have to deal with those?
Get rid of, do you mean put them in the closet and forget that they're there? Or do you mean actually sell them and make them leave your house?
Yeah, probably. Yes. The latter.
Okay. If you sell them and make them leave your house, I think it's okay.
Okay.
Because I assume you're talking about, like, what you'll end up paying $100 more or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Like, this is a thing that annoys me just generally. Like, nobody reviews stuff in a way that they like explore the UI. Dude. Even like kitchen appliances, we were talking about this, like we have to buy a new microwave oven that goes above our stove and nobody is telling us whether the controls for that are sane, because right. nobody does good UX on kitchen appliances.
It's crazy. Like, how do you pronounce the everybody's favorite monitor and TV review site? Is it RTings, RTings? You know what I'm talking
Ratings
about?
Is how I always said it.
Is that what that's supposed to be?
I assumed.
Okay.
I thought they were just bad at picking the vowel to remove from the early 2000s web like nomenclature.
If that was supposed to be a cheesy, like, you know, Silicon Valley, let's remove the vowel kind of situation, I don't think it quite comes across personally, but.
No.
Anyway.
Probably it was the domain that was available, though.
Yeah. Anyway, like you were, I hadn't actually thought about that until you just put it that way. Like you were so right that like on sites like that for displays, for example, they are so exhaustive about like using industry standard like color and luminance measuring tools to tell you everything you could possibly want to know about the quality of the color and light coming out of the screen, and completely gloss over the fact that, for example, these monitors have auto input switching that can't be disabled. And like that ruins my workflow when I'm trying to use multiple devices on these things. Or, for example, that these ASUS monitors, for whatever reason, don't work with MacBooks well or at all. I don't know why that is, but like there's so many people out there after I got these things and couldn't get rid of them that I found like, yeah, my MacBook just doesn't output to these things and I have no idea why. And like nobody's been able to figure that. It's like if I had known these things, I would have looked for something else.
Well, and like, so sometimes you can get a special firmware from the manufacturer that fixes these specific problems if you call them and complain.
Wait,
like,
what?
If it's a common enough complaint, they'll have a one-off firmware that you can put on the device occasionally. Or they'll have like a admin, like they'll have a higher level menu that you can go to to flip stuff off.
Should I call ASUS? Do you know anybody at ASUS?
You should just call their support. Like I was going to say, normally I would say, call the people, but with ASUS, good luck, man. it's a lot of customer service and they're going to tell you to pound sand for like 23 tries probably.
Right.
The thing I would say is, like, microwave ovens is a perfect example of this, right? Because like all I want out of the microwave oven is I want like a plus 30 seconds button that I can add 30 seconds to the timer, right? I want to be able to set power and time independently with like four button presses, not 50. I don't give a shit about potato buttons or pizza buttons or any of that nonsense. And I want the timer to be usable at the same time the microwave oven works. And the only reason I care about this stuff is because I've had them in the past. This stuff didn't work. And it's maddening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I guess like that was the concept behind the Wirecutter, right? Product reviews that are written from the standpoint of just a person using these things and not overly technical or like.
Well, no, the point was to do both. Like was supposed to be usability and technical stuff. And but they do it a pretty good job on most stuff. But like nobody reviews microwave ovens really, except for maybe Consumer Reports.
Yeah.
And also because like Whirlpool will rebrand the same exact hardware with a different trim on for Lowe's and Home Depot and Amazon and all the different places you buy this stuff. So they all have slightly different model numbers, and which software gets loaded on the same hardware is entirely dependent on which stuff is screen printed on the UI. It seems like I don't know. I feel like anytime I buy an appliance, I buy the extended warranty so that when I don't like it, like we sent a stove back.
Wow.
Because we didn't like the stove.
So I was just about to say, I didn't know you could do this for like household appliances, but for something like a monitor, generally, this wasn't the case with these monitors, but my policy is just you buy from a place like Amazon that has a very liberal return policy at this point, because that's kind of the only way you can truly guarantee you're not going to hate the thing, right? Like you have to get it in front of you and use it yourself.
Well, but like
things like modern devices are too complex for anybody to review every single possible use case. You just have to put it through your own paces.
Yeah. And like the cost of returning, say, a dryer, we had to send a dryer back once, was substantial. Like it wasn't like we were able to return it immediately, because Best Buy is, if you buy the extended warranty from Best Buy, they'll take anything back basically. But like prior to that, if you had something that we had to return, then like you ended up paying $100 to get them to come pick it up and bring the new one again. So anyway.
Yes. Buy from retailers you trust with generous
Yeah.
customer service and return policies, I guess.
Yeah. And also, like, if you definitively want it to interoperate with something, or like for microwave ovens, I know exactly how I want the control stuff to work. Like, there are videos of on YouTube of people using their microwave control panels, and that helps. That helped a ton.
That does help.
Yeah.
Shout out to B&H, I have to say.
B&H?
Yeah.
B&H.
Wait, is that, do they have
a
jingle?
From Wally? Oh, no, it's B&L by and large. Sorry.
I don't know if, does B&H even stand for anything?
I have no idea.
I didn't even know who they were until I started working with people who had done production in the greater New York, New Jersey area.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, we bought a bunch of stuff from them at Tested because they were, like, if you want production cameras or stuff mail order with a good return policy, they're pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that extends to kind of everything. Like, I bought a pair of hard drives from them about a month ago, and then, like, 2 days before the end of the return window, I noticed that they had better hard drives for the exact same price.
And they took them back?
For the cost of return shipping, they allowed me to return them in exchange. So they are pretty cool. All right. How about a couple more here? Chip Shirley.
Shirley, Chip.
The recent Activision Blizzard acquisition brings up an old issue I've had. Why do you think Netflix is included in FANG and Microsoft excluded? It has to be more than just FANG sounds cooler than any variation of GAMFA, right? I mean, first of all, Netflix is a gigantic company by market cap, and like, my understanding is I think they like pursue talent and pay just like these other companies, right?
Well, and for a long time, they were a high double digit percentage of all traffic on the internet.
Right. That's what I'm saying is like Netflix is actually in the same league as these other companies in terms of general metrics.
Well, I think the argument originally was that Microsoft is mostly on the edges, like they build the clients, but they weren't super dominant in like cloud servers. And stuff like that.
So hang on, is the concept behind FANG not just like kind of size and value of these companies, but more that they deal in foundational internet technology, like they are the backbone of the internet?
I think FANG is more of a construct that is not particularly well thought out, or like there's no IEEE spec for what it takes to be a FANG company.
Well, maybe there should be.
But like Apple's kind of the same way, right? Because Apple's a client.
Yeah, that's true.
For the most part, yeah, right?
Sure. I mean, you know, the iCloud, but that's still like a layer on top of, it's not like, well, they do run their own data centers, but
not at the scale of Google or Facebook I mean, now maybe, but when the FANG stuff started, it wasn't
like they weren't Apple running runs data centers to serve its own needs, not the needs of everybody else. Right.
That's exactly it. I don't know. I always thought it was weird. It's like going back and watching old Simpsons with the kiddo. It's really funny how many shots they take at Microsoft in those late 90s episodes.
I understand.
Like Bill Gates shows up on one and helps restructure Homer's internet company. Like whenever they need a throwaway evil company, it's either like, you know, Bob Dole or Microsoft. It's weird that all of a sudden Microsoft, it's like Microsoft went through the, hey, maybe tech companies are bad, fire 20 years before everybody else has. And
came out the other side.
Yeah. Now they're out the other side. I don't know.
Is it GAMFA weird?
Sounds weird though.
Yeah, it does. Is it weird that not to digress about the Simpsons, but is it weird that I think of the Simpsons as a period piece, as a period show, and that anything like basically anything in The Simpsons that deals with technology that is newer than, like, say, 1993 just feels, like, horribly out of place to me. Like, the internet should not exist in The Simpsons.
It's been really funny watching...
should not exist in The Simpsons.
It's really weird watching the internet become a thing that is, like... It started out as, here's some weird shit nerds are into, and then there were a bunch of jokes about nerds, to Homer looking stuff up on the internet being a weird thing, to just like the internet being part of the conversation in the last, like, in seasons like 8 through 18 or 17 or something like that.
It's kind of like, I don't know. It feels like it would be the same thing as like Norm from Cheers, just like pulling out his iPhone 13 at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, like it just feels out of place. Something about it is wrong, but maybe that's me.
That would be, we watched an episode yesterday that was, it was like, I remember these, I don't know if I was primed enough for the absurdism of like a season 12, like the season 12 and season 13 high points. Cause it was just the episode where Flanders and Homer's wives that they accidentally married in Vegas, can't come back to Springfield and find them. Huh. And it's just, the whole thing is just super, super absurd and really, really like shockingly dark for like,
yikes,
for like late 90s, early 2000s, okay. Sunday night TV.
I was going to say, I think I had tapped out a good bit before that.
Like this, we're definitely, as we get into like season 12 and 13, we're into the ones that I have seen once versus the ones that I recorded on VHS in college and watched obsessively.
Okay. I think I actually, I loved The Simpsons when it was new, and I think I stopped actually around like season 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there.
You missed a bunch of, like, the big takeaway from going back and rewatching all of these is the ones that I thought were garbage then, I was just an asshole and didn't appreciate for the most part. There's definitely some bad episodes in there, but it is the quality level of everything that we've seen so far going through like season 13 is astounding.
Real quick before we move on, I've seen Magma floated recently as a replacement for Fang. I mean, yeah, first of all, I think that's awful because you're just giving in to Facebook's desperate attempt to rebrand and deflect controversy.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just to be clear, I assume that's Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, Apple.
I'm sure. Yes.
Which, what does that say about Netflix? Why can't it be Magman?
Brad, it can't be Magman. Why not? No, I say no.
Why not?
As the arbiter of what is okay on the internet and in terms of, I say no, sir.
Magman sounds like a long forgotten like 50s DC superhero made out of lava.
Magman is a Mega Man 6 character.
Okay, that works.
A villain, yeah.
Yes. Anyway.
Is he magnets or is he lava or is he both?
I don't know. Let's see. I need one more question here. What am I going to do?
Can we ask that Scalydon one?
Yeah, I was saving that for last.
Okay.
I'm going to do one more before that.
Okay, perfect.
From Warbird. Can't believe I'm giving in again. At least it's not about college football.
That's something.
Brad, post your NeoFetch config.
I don't even know what NeoFetch is.
Oh, dude, it's the best.
Is it fetch but new?
No. NeoFetch is the thing. Have you ever seen screenshots of like somebody's Linux desktop and they have a terminal window up?
Like they've just logged into. You just described every screenshot of a Linux desktop ever.
So now I'm filling in a crucial hole in your Linux knowledge. And their terminal has got like a big ASCII art version of the logo of their distro with a bunch of like stats listed about the type of terminal they're using and their like CPU and memory and like.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Vaguely.
You've seen this.
It is a thing that is what is familiar to me. Yes.
And there will be a little bar of RGB colors at the bottom that are basically all the colors that terminal is capable of.
Okay.
You'll know exactly. Go Google NeoFetch. You'll see what I'm talking.
Okay.
As soon as you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Brad, you're not going to make NeoFetch happen.
It's all it is a thing that people set up to show when they log into a terminal or a remote SSH connection on their Unix machine.
This is exhausting. Look cool
in screenshots.
This is exhausting.
It is literally in the mission statement of NeoFetch. This thing is here to look cool in screenshots.
I can install this in Windows now, which seems to be antithetical to the entire idea of what NeoFetch is.
Hang on. Is it available?
NeoFetch supports almost 150 different operating systems from Linux to Windows, all the way to more obscure operating systems like Minix, AIX, and Haiku.
I don't think here. I'm just going to check because he asked. I don't think I don't have NeoFetch set up to go on any of the like 8 things I SSH into at any given time.
That seems like a primary machine thing, not a remote machine thing.
Yes. Although if they really have it for Windows, hang on. Is it available in Chocolaty? I'm just going to install it right now. Let's find out. It is WinFetch. Oh. Wait, what is WinFetch?
WinFetch. Definitely not making WinFetch happen.
I searched for NeoFetch and WinFetch came up, and I don't know if I trust this. I'm going to install it anyway.
I'm scared of Chocolaty these days.
Why?
Chocolaty's fine. I'm scared of Winget. Winget, yes. Every time I search for something in Winget, I get weird things that feel like they are not appropriate.
Yeah, the package vetting in Winget, I think, is kind of questionable so far. I'm installing WinFetch, though. Let's see what happens here. Yep. That's NeoFetch, all right.
There you go.
That's cool. I'm never going to use that again.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
I'm proud of you, Brad.
I don't actively use NeoFetch, although I think it's kind of cool. You know what is fun? You know what's fun, though, is to go through it and just like, oh, you know what? You could actually just script this now that I think about it. I went on GitHub at one point and looked up I looked in the source to see what distros they have ASCII art for.
Oh.
And you can tell it at the command line to show you whatever distro's ASCII art logo you want. So if you want to see Ubuntu or Arch or...
Well, so it's a software of lies is what you're telling me.
Mint. Yeah, you can make it look like any OS you want.
Boo. Can we do this? Can we do this hologram question?
Bring back operating system fetishism.
That comes with tribalism and people yelling at each other about Slackware being better than Gentoo. And I don't need that in my life.
That's fetishism is positive. Tribalism is negative.
Is it, Brad? Is it really?
Being fascinated with the mundane details of things is a fun way to be.
Okay. Look, question, like being curious is always good.
That's what I'm talking about. I'll give you that one. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Just tinker with things, play with things, like dig into stuff. It's fun. All right. Holograms?
Holograms.
From Helen C.
Yeah.
I remember 15 to 20 years ago reading that making holograms was some secret, unfakeable process. Is that still true, or can anybody dial one up from Shenzhen or 3D print a hologram printer now?
Okay, so there's some... I did some research on this one because I was curious.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
In the old days, to make a hologram, you needed like a concrete floor and a sand table because you needed to isolate the laser and the film and the thing you were shooting on the hologram from any kind of vibration at all. Like the slightest, like a truck driving by two blocks away would jack it up and make it fuzzy and not look good. And you'd make those holograms by separating out a laser. Like you take off the filter that focuses like a laser. You'd separate out into two beams, and then you'd combine those beams on the 3D object with the film in between them, and it would make a thing in there. The neat thing about holograms was for a really long time you couldn't scan them with like 2D scanners because there's depth information there, and you couldn't print them with normal printers for the same reason. Some people a couple of years ago figured out how to use some nanoparticle nonsense to print like holograph, like things that look like holograms, but maybe aren't exactly. So they're a little bit less useful as an unfakeable thing. Like people put them on, like credit card manufacturers put them on credit cards. They're on Austrian currency. Several currencies have holograms on them now. The TLDR is it's a lot easier to make them now because you don't have to do the long exposures. It used to be in like the 80s, the lasers were so low power that it had to be like a 12-hour exposure for stuff. Now it's like seconds because we can get higher power lasers. So they're easier to make now. You can buy for like $150 make a hologram kit that you can do at home. Ooh. But you do need a really dark room and pretty stable floors in order for it all to work.
Does this get us, I'm sure this has absolutely no bearing on this, but does this get us any closer to the fabled holographic storage that we used to hear about so much?
No, that's a different thing, sadly.
I figured it was.
There's a good acronym here, though. DOVIDs. Diffractive Optical Variable Image Devices. And the reason these work is that they refract light instead of reflect it, which is why scanners and printers and stuff don't work with them.
I see. Okay. It's good to know.
But also you can, if you have a hologram, you can send it off someplace and get it replicated onto like spools of stickers and get the stickers made in quantities of, I think, 10,000. So, you know, it's a $1,500 setup to get
Yikes.
One made.
Yikes.
Yeah. So it's not hard.
Not hard, but not an impulse.
Yeah, it's not something you do on a whim, but if you wanted to put a hologram on a product that you were selling for money, it's not out of the question.
Right. Like that is business investment territory. That's not like goof on your friends with an embarrassing hologram territory quite yet.
I would say $10,000/$1,500 startup cost is firmly in the realm of Kickstarter goofs.
Yeah, so I was going to say you could like crowdsource among quite as like several of your friends might get it down.
Yeah, if you wanted to get like something really funny put on a hologram and you had 500 friends, you could make that happen probably.
Oh, yeah, definitely. At that point, sure. All right, last question from Kaladin. This is such a good idea. Why did we not think of this?
That's a brilliant idea.
Can we get a podcast topic suggestion channel for folks to upvote? Think of all the time savings for thinking of new topics. This is, dude.
Yeah. Galaxy brain business here.
How did this... Should it be a channel or should it be a thread on the this week's episode channel?
I was going to say there are products that people use for this service, including like lots of game development, early access game titles, which I've been paying a lot of attention to lately, use Trello often for this. Mm-hmm. The other one is there's a couple of startups that do like this as a service that's not like Trello is kind of like a development,
yeah,
like a workflow
Roadmap kind of thing.
yeah, like organizing sprints and stuff like that. There's some that are outside of that kind of realm now, and I'll look at, I'm looking at them for day job stuff. So maybe we'll set one up for us too, and we can do some, we can double whammy, because I like this idea a lot.
Yes, for sure. I think we should just put it right there in the Discord.
Yeah, but I don't know how we would do the votes in the Discord. Like, how would we limit the number of posts?
Emotes?
How would we...
Like reactions?
I mean, we could do reactions. I don't know. Maybe we need like a two-phase process where people nominate stuff, and then we move the nominations into a relatively locked channel and give a thread per nomination or something like that. I mean, there's... Because I want people to be able to talk through it. Because I feel like if they can talk through it, it's going to give... Like, we'll quickly realize whether there's enough meat there or not.
That's fair. Yeah.
I don't know.
Much to think about. This is a fantastic, some version of this will manifest.
To be continued. I kind of put this question in because I want people to talk about it and on the Discord.
Yeah. Even ideas for how to implement this idea would be great.
If people have things that they've used internally at like companies and stuff for this, love to hear that.
Yeah.
We would love to hear that.
Yes, for sure. All right. That's it. No more questions. I mean, there are more questions, but
we've reached the end.
We're gonna save the rest.
Yeah. This is, as always, Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod is a 100% listener supported show. So if you would like to find out how to support the Tech Pod and join our fabulous Tech Pod patron community in the Discord, you can by going to patreon.com/techpod. As always, we would like to thank all of our patrons, but especially our executive producer tier patrons, including Andrew Slosky, Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, David Allen, Jacob Chappell, James Kamick, Joel Krauska, Octothorpe Bunny Crimes. That's written out now. It's not just the hashtag sign anymore. No.
Really? They made it official?
They made it official.
Oh, that's great.
And Twinkle Twinkie. Thank you all so much. But also, it's the end of the month, so we want to thank our associate producer tier patrons as well, including Andre M. Burke, Arthur Geese, Dan Brockman, Dave Yulian, David Fan, Graham Banks, Jad Rita, Jason Nealand, Jay Maybe, Jorge Pereira, Josh Klein, Julian, Mike Bell, Nathan Phelps, Ryson, Sanchit Kumar, Steve Lin, Terry Cox, Thomas Shea, and Wedge. Thank you also so much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Yes.
And everybody, like, it's so nice. I've been so busy post game launch that I don't spend as much time in the Patreon the Discord as I used to. But when I do pop in, I learn something every single time, and it's one of my absolute favorite places on the internet. So
I had an interesting experience.
Oh, what happened?
I bought more Mr. RAM.
Oh,
because that PlayStation Core is going to work fine on one,
but it'll be better.
But it's going to work ever so slightly better on two.
Yeah.
Anyway, I bought it from a very, I alluded to this before. I bought it from a very boutique Mr. Part Maker.
Okay.
Who has a website that looks like it's from the late 90s, and he takes orders directly to an email address.
And then just PayPal the money or Venmo the money or something.
Yeah. Anyway, I talked about it in the Mr. channel on there, and then apparently somebody else went and put in the exact same order I did. It's for an older model of RAM, I should clarify.
Okay.
It's for a model of RAM that you really wouldn't buy for a standard Mr. setup these days.
Is this just to match the RAM you had?
No, it's a 32. The RAM you need for the PlayStation Core, it doesn't need to be big. It just needs to be there.
Oh, it's so for, I accidentally ordered 228 meg sticks. So right. I just put my second 128 meg stick.
So you're fine there, but all you need is the smallest possible RAM. I think it might only use like a few hundred kilobytes of that memory. I think I'm not 100% sure, but
wow,
it's for latency and timings. It's not for capacity. So anyway, I guess this guy, when this other person on our Discord put in an order, said like, "Hey, why is there all this interest in this old RAM model again all of a sudden?"
And apparently I had
directed a number of orders for this old part that he doesn't even make anymore to him.
I love it.
It was a fun little, and then I talked to him about it.
Oh, that's cool.
You thought it was amusing.
It's really nice to have a place to talk about weird stuff and just have people that know about it and are interested. And
every channel is its own boutique little niche community about a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So and everybody's welcome. You can find out again more by going to patreon.com/techpod. We, as always, really appreciate the support, and I guess we'll be back next week. We have a patron episode coming up too. So
we do.
Yeah. Probably more questions, I'm hoping.
Maybe. I think it might be time for a project check-in. I've been so busy, I've got stuff piling up around me that I haven't had time to work on in my spare time.
Yeah, I don't have we'll have to think about that.
I'm doing a NAS rebuild.
Yeah, I gotta do that. I'm gonna re-architect the whole thing, I think.
Yes, that's exactly what dude. Maybe this is for the patron.
Okay, yeah, well, to be continued.
I started to say, I don't know if this will go up in time for people to tell us if we should absolutely not talk about this. I downloaded a 15-page PDF about the relative merits of different ZFS topologies.
Oh, boy.
And spent last Sunday afternoon reading it.
Oh, boy.
The results were eye-opening.
Huh.
Boy, have I been screwing myself over on the performance of my storage pool.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my God. You have no idea.
Okay. To be continued.
Let me tell you the good word about Striped Mirror VDevs.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I've been doing with Parity this whole time.
Yes, so there are profound limits to a RAID-Z setup, to a Parity model. In terms of IOPS in particular, like read and write streaming, read speeds and like write speeds are not as bad, but the IOPS are severely bottlenecked compared to a mirror setup, like bad.
You probably do. I see mine is much more of a place to dump stuff and much less of a place that I actually do like large file work transfers. Yes. But since you're doing video work on yours, it probably matters a lot more for you.
And audio. Like, yeah, and I've got this like crazy fast network connection to my NAS. Like it is literally all the storage in my PC. I don't keep like big storage in my PC anymore. So it,
wow.
But
we'll talk about that on this month's Patreon episode, I guess, then.
The numbers may surprise you unless people don't want to hear about it.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. We will be back next week with another episode of Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. Maybe something new and exciting next week. We'll have to see.
I think definitely.
I'm feeling pretty confident this time.
I'm going to say definitely.
Okay. 100%, barring anything weird happening. So, yeah, we'll see you all then. Have a good weekend, everybody. I just waved at the camera for no reason.